Hello, and a very warm welcome, my name is Laurie Cam. I'm Senior Content Producer for Children's BBC, and I'm delighted to chair this panel, this discussion, which is called Conveying Careers. My career, it's safe to say, has spanned from the days when editing was literally physically splicing a tape right through to today, where most professionals and kids can edit on an iPhone, which frankly has more power than the beast of a machine that I learnt to edit on. Our distinguished panel here today are here to pose the question, in a media world where content and platforms are increasingly converging, can and should careers also converge? Or probably more to the point, how are they converging? And what skill sets are needed to meet that challenge? Our panel, I'll very briefly introduce them. They can tell you a little bit more about themselves. We have Juliet Zabar, Managing Director for Plugin Media. John Hancock, Senior Producer for CBeebies, Series Producer, should I say, for CBeebies. Lucy Murphy, Creative Director of Zoomie. Mario Dubois, Commissioning Exec Producer for Children's Interactive Independence. And Melanie Stokes, Co-Director for Kindle Entertainment. And starting us off is Juliet.
Hello. Thanks very much for coming along to this session. I'm going to give you a perspective on this topic from the point of view of a employer, essentially, and someone who is always looking to maintain a diversity of skills within our company. So this is a picture of us, and we were founded in 2003, and we are a superfused business, and I'm going to explain what that means later on. We're a team of 17 design, technical development, and production staff. We're basically split a kind of third, a third, a third across those disciplines. And we're based in Brighton, and we make digital entertainment for kids. So we essentially make websites, apps, games, and we deliver, and animation, and we deliver that across online, mobile, and broadcast. Oh, that's my last. So we kind of set ourselves up within this kind of context, which is the premise that children expect to find their favorite entertainment brands on every single device that they have access to. And for them, that's not a state of kind of disrupted media, it's just the way things are. And then additionally to that, it's this huge kind of sense of revolution that's been happening right across the kind of children's content sector, primarily due to the rise of mobile over the last few years. And so we're operating in quite a kind of fast-moving, slightly fragile and very diverse sort of business environment. And that has kind of led us to split our business essentially into two, which is we're Plugin Media, which is a work-for-hire studio, an agency that makes apps and games and web content for clients. And then we also have a part of our business that's essentially a transmedia production company originating new IP within this space. And just to kind of underscore that, this is just a kind of snapshot of all the different, well, some of the different projects that are going on in our studio at the moment. We've actually got a few more as well. But really just to say here that as well as there being a kind of mix of sort of interactive projects, so we've got online and apps, we've also got linear media, linear development going on, and we're mixing obviously client work with our original IP. And a lot of the content that we're delivering here has many different business models underpinning it as well. So it's a really, really diverse environment in which to work. And essentially, in order to work within that environment, these are all the skills that we need within our business. Pretty much everything on this list, and there is a massive technical jargon list in the middle there, are stuff that we can undertake in-house and actively pretty much engage with all of those different disciplines within many of the projects that we undertake. We do occasionally use freelancers as well, quite often around development. We work with external writers, and we also work with external editors. So fundamental to kind of maintaining this mixed output is a concept really about agility. So I was just going to talk through each discipline and just show you how this idea of agility is really embedded within our staff and how each discipline works with this dynamism and kind of potential to kind of chop and change and explore different media. So our technical team are constantly having to learn new technologies because things just change super, super fast. And I think, you know, maybe if you work in television and a new camera comes out, generally your DOP will not need to have to learn how to operate a camera again, but quite often our programmers are having to get to grips with a whole new programming language or a whole new technical platform, and they're having to do that on a really, really regular basis. And so in order to do that, we do kind of internal knowledge sharing days where everyone will get together in one room and really explore a tech over a course of a day. And this is our team looking at making a multiplayer HTML5 game in a day as a kind of internal project. This one's an excuse to get a naked man on screen. But really, the point here really is about the fact that our design team, they all have different software specialisms. Many of them can work across 2D and 3D and a huge range of different skills there. But really what we look for are people who are really, really good artists. And so we're always kind of trying to hire people who have very good drawing skills and composition skills. And they're quite traditional skills, really, but we kind of have the view that drawing takes a lot longer to master than, say, learning Photoshop does. And also, once they're within the team, we really try and maintain those art skills as well. So quite often our team go along to life drawing classes over lunchtime and really kind of keep that going. And as we've moved into IP development, what's happened to their skill sets is they're having to do a lot more character design. The focus is more on origination as opposed to working with externally produced assets, although they're very good at that. And there's a lot of kind of workflows that we have with working with external studios and other IP and bringing them into our technical environments. And then finally, on the kind of production side of things, I think our production, we have two producers in the company, and they've both worked on both interactive and linear projects now. And sure, there's been a bit of a learning curve. I think one of the things that was hardest for them to get to grips with was the idea of doing a broadcast budget, which seemed very kind of different, and very kind of different way of costing for things than there is in interactive. So that was interesting. But equally, they've had to get to grips with putting together an app sales P&L. And I think, you know, what's really interesting about the way producers need to work these days is that, you know, there's almost less it's about the difference between television and interactive, and it's more about business skills, because I think producers are needing to be much more entrepreneurial these days, and that applies right across both TV and interactive. I said I'd come back to this idea of superfused, and we're based in Brighton, and this term kind of came out of a piece of research that was done by the University of Brighton about the tech cluster that exists there. And really it was being applied to businesses that combine sort of technology and IT skills with softer creative skills, and particularly kind of arts and humanities as well. And what they found when they looked at these businesses which did that is that they were more innovative in their approaches, and they were more willing to experiment. And actually, they were growing a lot faster than businesses who weren't fused. And so I think what's really, that really kind of embeds through into our business. And it's not just about that mix of content that we output, but it's really about the culture within the business and the fact that as a team, we're very much super fused. And with both technical and creative disciplines working together at the same time, everyone has to work together, and we integrate the two very quickly. And finally, my last slide was just a follow-up on that point about culture, which is obviously it's really challenging kind of working in this kind of environment. We have to rely really heavily on the skills of our staff. And so in order to not get left behind, we've got to kind of keep agile and keep with it. So whilst there are kind of formal training opportunities and they do go on courses and stuff, I think a lot of it is about the internal initiatives that we have. And so first of all, we really look to hire people with a very flexible mindset, people who aren't wedded to a particular technology, and people who are really excited about creating content across multiple platforms. When we finish a project, everyone shares it, so all that knowledge comes back into the business. And also we do these show and tells, which might focus on a new technology. So we've just done one recently on virtual reality. And these expand into hack days, where we explore stuff in more detail. And then that, in turn, feeds our development pipeline with new projects. And then we come out to conferences and really understand what we do in terms of the business context of it. And finally, my last point is just this whole concept about knowledge sharing, which I think is fundamental to the way we do things. And, you know, whether it's internal workshops with our team or getting freelancers in to share their skills, that is completely underpinning everything we try and do, and in order to kind of keep those skills alive and deliver the content that we do.
Thank you. Wow, that was a very meaty.
It was a bit
condensed.
Meaty. Sorry, I'm a bit over.
Yeah, insightful overview.
I'm passing the clicker before say any more.
You've talked about a lot of skills there and a lot of training and a lot of attempts to foster an environment where people can be agile. Is there, if anything, could you name a skill set that is a baseline skill that, regardless of what discipline you're in, you've found in your environment people should have or do have to help them be agile?
Yeah, it's just a flexible mindset, it really is. It's about, you know, we don't tend to hire people who come and say, oh, I only want to do game development, or I only want to work in Unity 3D. We look for generalists.
Okay, thank you, Julia. John?
If that was the meat, I'm the vegetarian option, I suppose. And I have no visual... I was going to do the naked man thing, but you've taken that, so you just get me talking for a little bit. I think the best way of me touching on this subject is just to explain my journey, because that's kind of all I have, really. I've been at the BBC for 15 years, but started 17 years ago. And the very first kind of day, I think... I remember very vividly walking into an office, and the researcher was as white as a sheet. And I said, "What's wrong?" And she said, "I've just been told we've got to do this new thing called self-shooting." And she was terrified of it. And I just landed at the right moment, because I went, "I've just done a camera course at uni. That's amazing. Great." And so I kind of landed in the industry at a time when there was this first kind of explosion of needing to become more kind of multi-skilled. And so I do consider myself fortunate to have landed at that time. And as I've kind of progressed over, you know, those few years, it was quite possible for me to gain some understanding and some practical skills in the aspects of television production, you know, editing, writing, self-shooting, you know, it was possible to do all of that. What I think is kind of the most significant difference now that we've gone through this second boom of the digital market exploding and of interactive content, is that I'm not so sure it is now possible to be truly skilled in all of the practical elements, because I think it's a bit like painting the fourth road bridge. I think if you tried to learn them all, you'd get to the end and then the first one would have changed again, so you need to go back. Now, that's probably a little bit helpful for me to say that, because I'm at a point where I don't possess all of those practical skills, so I would say that, really. But I suppose my point is that as I'm now kind of producing brands, I produced Mr. Bloom's Nursery kind of 4 or 5 years ago, which was a traditional TV show that had kind of website kind of presence, website support. Even in the last few years, it's changed again, and I now do Swashbuckle, which has absolutely been thrown out there in different platforms in a way that other shows that I have worked on haven't done before, and very much tapping in on what you're saying, that we understand that our audience expect to see Swashbuckle on all kind of platforms there, therefore we need to be there, and it needs to feel as cohesive an experience for them if they see it only within an app as they would if they see it on TV. And I've also done projects like The Lingo Show, which was an interactive proposition. First of all, it was a game on the CBeebies website that I then was charged with creating a TV kind of version for. So I've begun to do things over the last kind of 5 or so years where I feel like I'm having more of an experience of working within this new kind of digital sphere. But I don't think personally that there is a vital importance for me to have the practical skills across all of those platforms. I think what it's most important is that I have an understanding, a sensitivity, understand the processes. And I think there are transferable kind of skills that enable me to navigate my way through that, I personally think that there is it's vital that we have expertise to bring to those different things. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Probably a question for you, John, that although you say that in your opinion you don't need to necessarily have the practical skills, but it helps to have the understanding, have you seen any kind of fallbacks or negative impacts of you not having those practical skills? How have you managed as a series producer to ensure that all of that is flowing and working as it should?
Do you know what? I think I try and come at that making it an advantage that I don't know how things work. I think that gives me an opportunity to ask the dumb questions that pushes it a little bit. Mm-hmm. So if I'm meeting with kind of our interactive team and we're talking about whatever kind of apps that are based on my brands and that's why my involvement's there, I feel I've got permission to use my innocence to my advantage, actually, mm-hmm. and to go, well, why can't we do this? That we should do it like that, because that would be much better for my brand than if we do it the way that you've always done it for the last 3 months, because things move very quickly. So it might well be that my colleagues in Interactive, like you yourself, kind of turn away when they meet me and go, oh, I wish you'd stop kind of, you know, being so so naive. But I genuinely would try and see it and use it as a positive, that my kind of innocence in some of those areas could be used as a way of, you know, pushing the agenda, actually.
And out of that sometimes could potentially come more creativity.
Yeah.
Thanks, John. On to Lucy, who hopefully will tell us all about her many varied roles and mediums.
Yes, like John, I think it's probably best to start just, you know, my progression. And I started out as a floater, which was an HR term when I was a university student. Every holidays, I rocked up at London Weekend Television and went to whichever department they sent me to, which was a fantastic introduction to television, because I worked in literally every single department, from legal through to sport. That was the boring holiday for me. Mm-hmm. Clive James, light entertainment. Being sandwiched between Cilla Black and Jeremy Beadle was enough to make me think that kids was where I wanted to be. So I stopped wanting to be an archaeologist, which was where I was heading, and went and joined an animation studio, King Rollo Films down in Devon. And being a small studio, I was really fortunate because you kind of pitch in and everybody does a bit of something. So although what I was ostensibly doing was doing TV sales and marketing, actually what I was doing was hanging over people's shoulders saying, what are you doing? Why do you do it like that? What makes a difference if you do this rather than that? So asking questions became a very big part of how I decided sort of what to do next. And in the same way, asking questions of the people I was selling programs to meant that I could go back to the studio and say, do you know what, if we did a half hour version of this, then we could sell it here, there and everywhere. So very quickly that became into a more of a development and co-production role, which I carried through. And then I've spent a lot of time doing development and production. So I've been lucky enough to work for big companies, small companies, and on projects. I've just spent 7 years working on Bing for CBeebies, which sort of brings me on to another sort of fundamental point, which I think Juliet and John have already touched on. If you are working in kids' media, you automatically have to work across platforms, because they do expect to see their favourite character in a book, in a magazine, in an app, on a website, on TV, on a DVD. And although you don't have to be completely au fait with the technicalities of all of those different platforms, you do have to understand the processes. And importantly, you really have to understand the different way that an audience responds to that platform. So the way that a child reads a book is very different to the way that a child watches a TV show. And the way that a child watches TV content is different to that. So in order to retain an editorial integrity across all of those different platforms, you at least have to understand that interaction between the audience and the platform. I think if I were sort of giving any advice to anybody, I would say keep asking questions. And people who have worked for me in the past who've asked questions, I've always been very happy to answer them and also to point them in the direction of people who would be able to help. That generosity is something that I think infiltrates the kids' business throughout, actually. I've been really lucky to have had friends who've been very happy to explain, and mentors who've spent time with me. And I think now it's our sort of duty to be mentors to people coming up and do the same thing. So not being afraid to ask a question. Don't be afraid to look stupid. Don't think that everybody knows everything, because they just don't. And working with the very best. And again, I think this is something that you touched on, John. If you are thinking that you have to know the nuts and bolts of every single platform, you just don't. But you do have to work with the very best people who do. And you will learn from them and they will learn from you. And having that kind of real, I can do that mentality of thinking, if something comes up, it's like, yes, we can do that. Of course we can do that. Let's find a way. And then usually there is a way. And before you know it, you kind of are crossing every platform.
Thank you. I just think that the theme from all three of you that seems to come up is this asking questions. Don't be afraid to look stupid,
yeah.
Because in one sense, we all have to in an ever-changing world. And I know that some people may think that there is that tension between being a specialist and a polymath. And the very nature of being a specialist means that you have to know everything about that subject.
But I think it comes down to audience and communicating your project to an audience. And if you have that completely cast iron view of what you're trying to communicate and who your audience is, then very quickly it becomes something that is, you know, very natural. I mean, okay, you work with the best publisher, you work with the best magazines, you work with the best app people, but you have to cling to your project and know who your audience is. And that then gives you the flexibility to ask some of the what may seem to you like dumb questions, but actually there's questions all of mm-hmm. us have probably asked from time to time.
Thank you, Lucy. And now we move to Mario.
Hi, everyone. It's a great panel, and actually I'm going to echo quite a lot of things that have been said already. I feel like that I'm the bread in the sandwich this lunchtime, because I'm going to wrap around a lot of things that have been said, and Melanie's going to be the dessert at the end, so that's no place for me to go. So a little bit about me. So I've had a sort of quite varied career. I've been in TV for quite a long time, worked on many different programs over many years, and then came the internet. Lucy's described, actually I was really curious about it and I wanted to know more about it, and I was completely oblivious to what the demands of working in that space was. So curiosity was a sort of really important thing for me in terms of trying to find out and evaluate where we were in terms of working in that digital space and expanding my career. I'm going to take you through a little example of what those demands are for digital using one of my current projects. I'm very grateful that it's one that the foundation have been working with us. It's an interactive TV idea that's going to launch in the autumn. It's at the far end of innovation, I think, but it's a great project. So I'm using that as a sort of background to giving you some practical tips in terms of understanding the demands. So, this complex little map is just a process that we go through in terms of how we'd approach a project in terms of design and user experience. This was kindly made for me by our UX team, Suzanne Clark at CBBC. So you can see there's different stages that we would apply. So we'd start off with understanding personas. You know, what's the age range that our idea or production reaches? Who are the personas that it's trying to reach? What are their habits? What are their interests and what are their motivations? All things that are actually really important in terms of shaping and guiding an idea in a story. Lots of brainstorming in terms of trying to evaluate that idea and work through what works best for the audience, what works best as a digital proposition. In this instance, actually, for Secret Life of Boys, it's 25 minutes of 5 times 25 dramas and 25 5-minute episodes, which are digitally interactively enhanced. So it's got a dual purpose. It's delivering to both multiple platforms. The good thing about this, I think, is there's a need to really communicate and talk amongst experts in terms of trying to evaluate that. But also, as you can probably guess, there's a real need for post-its, and that's a much undervalued resource in the digital space. But it helps you sort of think through stuff and, you know, be able to capture those things. We then went through some competitor analysis, understanding who our audience were looking at and using in terms of their time, what technologies they were on, and were there any gaps in our offering or the offerings that are currently out there in terms of the space, so that we were better informed. Followed by, now this is a really complicated, but all it means is that we mapped out what we needed to do in a real sort of detailed process. It enabled us to look at what the user journey, the audience journey, in terms of taking up our content, working out how they would use it. It enabled us to think about the appropriate content for platform and audience, when we would serve content, how that would work, and also to start to think about the sort of more technical components in terms of this project. Next came a more creative opportunity to look at the design and look at how the look and feel of a project would be for the audience. What the user interface, that's a sort of more technical word, but what the buttons might look like. How we'd maintain consistency, especially when we've got different approaches for TV, for an interactive release. Colours that we'll use, how we'd access video. So lots of detailed design questions, but quite technical as well. Followed by some prototyping of testing that out against what the actual users might, how they might use it, and also testing it technically on our platforms. More user testing in front of the audience, you know, how would they actually evaluate our proposition, what's their feedback, how we could improve and augment that. It's nearly ended. followed by some technical communication in terms of what's our technical plan, how do we get that across to all our audience, device appropriate content. So lots and lots of things. Now, the purpose of that is that's one approach, and looking at design. I couldn't have possibly known all of those things or been an expert in all those areas. However, with the support of the relevant experts in that field, I became much more aware of what the requirements are, what the best practice were, what would suit our audience best. And through that collaborative process, I was able to say, okay, so I can help shape the direction of this, and my role was becoming much more informed, and we would deliver a better product for the audience. So to answer going back to the original question, which you won't be able to see from there, you know, can producers and writers work across platforms? Absolutely, we do already. Do we have to be specialists? Do we have to be experts? Well, I think you can be specialists, but I think in the digital space, because of the complexity of the approach, I think you need to rely on a bigger team. It needs to be like a production line. It needs to be iterative in terms of how you can adapt, and that's the beauty and flexibility of digital. So with that approach, with that support, with that knowledge, I think you can be much more creative and have a digital future.
Thank you, Marie.
And finally, we come to Melanie.
Hi. I run a small indie in Hackney with Anne Brogan, and we largely specialise in children's and family drama and comedy. So I was sort of thinking about this idea about how the world that we're in has changed so much, and how that's impacted on what we do, which is essentially telling stories. We're an IP generator. We come up with original ideas for characters and for stories, and then we go and pitch them to whoever will give us some money to make them. And I think that, you know, in TV, if you look at kind of the history of TV, it's always been very much influenced by the technology that's available to it. So if you think right back to when silent movies first started, silent movies were shown in reels of 20 minutes each. And actually, those 20 minutes of three became the 60-minute TV drama three-act structure. So the technology has always been at the heart of the creativity of storytelling. There's kind of anecdotally, people think that the reason why TV drama is much more verbal and dialogue-driven than cinema is because TV came out of radio originally, which is obviously was a spoken medium. So whereas cinema came out of silent movies, so it was much more visual and cinematic. So I think it's really interesting to see that the technology and the art and the craft have always gone together, and when they really work together, you get fantastic things. That the craft of writing also, you know, when you're working in TV, you get the kind of the business and the originality bucked up against one another. So you'll have a writer really frustrated they can't do X, Y, or Z, but often that can then come up with something more original because of the kind of economic restrictions are placed on you, because you are actually in a business in a way that maybe other kind of storytellers aren't so dictated to by the finances. You know, TV drama is really expensive, so you have to work within that budget. Whereas, you know, I often will go to the theatre and think, God, that needed a good script editor. But you know, it because we have to. Everything we do has to serve an audience who are going to come back and watch it again. So I think that, you know, the craft has always been at the heart of what we do. What was interesting more recently was thinking about how that TV is now just one of many platforms available to the young audience, and looking at kind of the boom of social media and how kids are kind of getting their stories and their comedy and their characters from a whole new range of platforms. And so we created a show called Dixie, and the reason I wanted to talk to you about that was because I think it is a really good example of how the technology impacts on the way that you tell the story. So in Dixie, what we do is we create a fictional social media site for an audience who actually, strictly speaking, aren't meant to be going on Facebook. So what we're doing is tapping into an aspiration that audience have. We know, you know, that one of the biggest things that any kind of story needs to do for a kid audience is be wish fulfilling. It's got to fulfill the audience's wishes and fantasies and desires. So we know that they want to be on Facebook. We know that they want to be in that cool kind of grown-up space. We also know that there's a whole range of creativity happening there, that kids are using their own phones to kind of send Snapchats, and they're really witty in how they do this, and there's a real inventiveness and creativity that we could tap into. So what we came up with was a site that where there would be a series of vloggers who would be friends together, and one of the girls, her page gets hacked. And she wants to find out why this person's hacked her page, well, who's done it and why. So in that respect, it's very much a traditional whodunit. She posts different events that happen to her on her investigation, and then the user, the kids, the viewers, it's really hard to know what to call them. Do you call them an audience? Do you call them friends? Because they're all of those things, contribute with their theories as to what they think has happened. And what I suppose what we were really delighted with the show, and we've now done Dixie 2, is that the audience really recognised that the whole narrative experience wasn't just the 3-minute little vlogs. It was actually going onto the character pages, reading posts, talking to the characters, so our writers would be the characters and would have live kind of chats where the kids could kind of ask questions of some of the characters and our writer would respond to those questions and see clues within the whole space rather than just clues within the traditional drama bit. So it's a real kind of example of how I think you can bring together technology with traditional storytelling.
Thank you, Melanie. So we've come to the end of the panel's talks, but we'd like to open up the floor to you guys to ask questions about. I think probably a couple of the things that I'm taking from this, or themes, are the ability to keep on learning, to not always know everything, and yet to know something about something very specifically is extremely valuable, and that's not going to go away. It's the way that those skills work collectively together. I think the audience is coming out of this constantly in terms of, regardless of what skills we may have or what technological changes are happening, we always follow the audience, and they to some degree will always dictate the spaces that we're working and the areas that we're learning in, so that we can meet them there and be there and give them the experiences that they're asking and already in already to some degree. Does anybody have any questions for the panel?
Hello, my name is Karen. I'm from Hachette Children's Group. This is aimed at John, but maybe all of you. When you're learning and asking the dumb questions, which I'm a big fan of myself, how do you give yourself parameters and a structure in which to move forwards and actually achieve something?
I suppose that's kind of dictated by kind of deadlines as much as anything. But I don't know. I mean, I think I haven't ever quite been in the position where I'm in the overall position of kind of leadership in an area that I haven't kind of had experience in. Because I'm a TV producer, and that would be my specialism, kind of as and where my brands kind of expand out into different platforms. I'm brought in more as a brand manager kind of for those things. So it's not that I'm then dictating the exact direction it should go in. It's just making sure that it stays true to the brand that I've established and the parameters that works in. That probably doesn't quite answer your question, but that's kind of where my experience has been.
I think there's a couple of things that you can think about. I think it's great to have that sort of ultimate ambition in terms of having ideas and where that could go, so long as that can be tempered with the realism of what can be delivered. And you take advice from the experts in terms of what's achievable. So if you had a combination of those things, you wouldn't go far wrong, I suspect.
And I'd also add something from kind of employer's point of view. If you've got someone in your team who's asking questions and you can tell that there is a real curiosity and a desire, then, you know, ongoing training is so important. I've done courses and have hugely benefited from them. There are lots of courses that you can go on, and if you've got someone sort of within your team that's asking those questions, then trying to really extract what it is that they, you know, what direction they want to go in, and training is really part of what we should all be doing as employers.
We have the gentleman at the front here.
Hi, Nick Lockie from Maverick Television. I've had a similar path to you guys, where I started off in TV production, and over the last decade, I've kind of moved across into digital, and there's never been like one point where I've kind of felt like I could tick a box and go, I can do that. I just kind of absorbed it all as I go along, and daily suffer from imposter syndrome, where I think somebody's gonna look over my shoulder and go, "You don't know what you're doing." but I guess questions for all of you, but particularly for Juliet, if somebody wanted to invest some time and resources in...
I thought you were going to say money.
Yeah, time. Yeah. Time and resources in learning a particular technology or technical skill that would be a good foundation for building other things on top. What do you think would be the best thing to go and do for that?
I have to say I completely am so thrilled that the national curriculum is now focusing on computing and coding as opposed to learning how to do PowerPoint, because obviously I'm an expert in PowerPoint because I have more slides than anyone else. But I find it so exciting that my son's coming home and telling me about the programming that he's learning. And I personally learnt HTML back in 2000, and I learnt Flash and a couple of other things. But I actually think that kind of pure coding and the rigor of doing it and the kind of overspill into logical thinking, I think is such a valuable life skill. And I think that, you know, I'm not an expert at all in programming, and it's been so long since I've programmed anything. And I have the asking questions thing, and I'll say, well, why can't it be done like that when I speak to my coders? And sometimes they'll sort of suck their teeth and say, well, it just can't. And, you know, you need to be able to push, you need to have that kind of general awareness. But I do kind of know that deep down, I kind of know the process that's going on there. So for me, I think kind of computer programming is just really super valuable. And, I mean, you know, maybe if you're making television, it's that, you know, learning how to, the technical skills to operate a camera or the light, the principles of lighting, or those kind of areas as well. It's learning how that technical underpinning is kind of influencing the product or the creative that's coming out of it.
I'd go the other end of the spectrum. I'd say it's understanding our audience and their habits, because they're so fast changing in line with technology and devices, that's a hard thing to pin down. But if you were able to do that, well, you could unlock untold riches.
Does anybody else on the panel have an extra skill to throw in there? Just checking before we move on.
Well, I think another one that could make the magic kind of triangle three is storytelling. You know, regardless of what platform we're talking about, it's got to be a good story well told. You can have you can know how to code, you know, everything, but if it's a crap story, or it's not, if it's a good story and you're telling it badly, then there's almost no point kind of coding it. So I think those elements of storytelling will never go away. It's just the platform that we tell it on.
Any more questions from the floor? Okay, I think I have one more question then, which would be, if there's one thing that each of you individually could give advice to somebody, regardless of what discipline they're in, and they say, I want to be far more flexible, I don't want to do what I'm doing anymore, but I want to have a broad understanding of everything that's going on out there so that I can at least play an important role in a team of people that are making content for children. What would that be if you've already said it, then that's fair enough. But Juliet, do you have any?
I don't know, I kind of think the missing person on this panel is probably a kind of teenager who's creating their own content and doing every single step of media creation that we've been doing throughout our careers. And and you know, when I say, you know, their media hasn't been disrupted, it's just the way it is. And so, you know, I kind of think once that generation, those digital natives, are kind of coming through to the point where they're delivering and making all the media that we consume, I kind of wonder whether it's going to be a very different picture, and you know, we'll be struggling to keep up, maybe.
John.
So I'm not sure that answered the question.
I think that's a very good answer.
I think I'll stick with what I said about storytelling. Okay. I think that's kind of the main, I think that's the universal thrust, I think.
And I think I'd go for curiosity and stay curious. You know, I think it's very easy to be daunted by new things, but if audiences are migrating to YouTube, find out why. Watch YouTube, see what's working, see why that content is appealing to your audience, and that will inform so much. And staying in touch with the audience is also so key. I mean, I, in my teens and 20s, was a volunteer at a local kids' hospital, and I spent hours and hours and hours playing and talking and communicating with kids. And I've tried to keep that going all through my career. You cannot make good content for an audience you have no contact with. So stay curious and stay in touch.
For me, I think it would. I'd echo that. Be curious, but be focused. You know, soak up as much information as you can, but be very focused about the way that you deploy your ideas. You know, if it's 8 to 10s and it's boys, what are the things that are triggering their passions that will make great stories or great interactive experiences or great video?
I think it's also about not getting so hung up on the technology, you know, because I was saying to the guys beforehand that in 10 years' time, I think Dixie will look really dated in a way that traditional TV won't, that because you can see that we're in love with this new thing. And I think every time there is a revolution, everyone gets really excited. And it's like 1980s pop videos, you know, with all those kind of boxes and all the kind of special effects that the video special viz guys were first discovering. So, you know, they date really quickly, those things, because the technology is kind of too much in charge. So I think that when you're creating something, what you really are doing is looking at the world that you're in and really observing that world and what is really important and how that world has changed. So I'd say that one of the things that the pictures that we get quite often don't feel as if they've been written in the modern world. We'll get this kind of this notion of a family that feels like it's a family that existed in 1984 in some sort of other TV land that we're not in. And I think it's about, you know, if you're writing and creating something, you really are, you've got to be now, that we're in this kind of fantastic, it's the hardest thing to write. I think it's so much easier to write about the past or the future or you know, a period piece. Writing something about now, creating for now, is the biggest challenge, because it's so much harder to have the distance to see what is really important now. But that's the challenge, I think.
Thank you very much. And probably just to close, we have a couple of minutes, I would say, from that, I would say that always remain open, always keep looking. Whatever your audience is, it's that whole flexible mindset, which is always looking for the answers and never assuming that you know everything, that we know everything. Because we will always find an answer out there somewhere and the right people to fit the right team. Thank you very much.